powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Welcome back into Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Going to get ESPN's Brady Henderson here in just one moment. We're going to be asking him about a couple Seahawks injury updates. Let's take you back through those just to remind you before we get Brady on the line. So let's go cut number three right here. This is Pete Carroll talking about whether or not Jamal Adams is going to be ready.
We got to get through the week, see what happens. You know, give him these days and figure it out. Take full advantage of the time and make sure that we're doing the right thing and taking care of him and looking after him. It's a long season again, and we'd love to have him back as soon as we can get him, but we want him back when he's right and back for the long haul.
So good news in that I think in the first place he wasn't placed on IR. It feels like he sounded relatively optimistic. Jamal Adams could make it back after the bye. I'm not reading too much into this yet. I think the team's being careful with him. He's a guy they want long-term for their future in addition to this tough stretch of games here. You also have a game against the Arizona Cardinals, which you might be able to get away with playing without Jamal Adams. Jake, are you nervous about this at all? Are you feeling any more skeptical about Adams' ability to come back?
Yeah, I am. I was hoping that we would hear Pete Carroll say, hey, they were able to take advantage of the 2 weeks off. They were able to take advantage of the bye week for Jamal Adams and that he is ready and raring to go in this first matchup of the NFC West opponents with the Arizona Cardinals. And I think with Jamal Adams, he's such a key member of this team. He's such an important factor in you know, schematically, in terms of his presence, in terms of the heart and the passion that he brings to this defense. So it definitely concerns me at this point, and I don't think we're going to find out whether Jamal Adams is going to be a part of the equation this week until probably Thursday.
Joining us right now is ESPN.com's Brady Henderson, covers the Seattle Seahawks. Brady, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How's everybody there doing?
Good, good. I hope you're calling us from your boat, first of all.
From the parking lot of the marina.
Okay, very close, very close. Brady, we were just talking about Jamal Adams, whether or not we'd see him back for the Cardinals. Are you expecting him to play this Sunday?
I think there's a good chance, and I only say that because Pete Carroll all but said he would, or he really did say that he was going to be back after the bye. He said that last week, and then he kind of backed off that yesterday and was non-committal about that. And I kind of wondered if, maybe there was a little bit of gamesmanship there and not trying to give away any more information than he has to on a day where the Seahawks did not have to release a practice report detailing who did what and everything like mm-hmm. that. So unless he had some sort of a setback over the bye week, I would expect him to play, although you just never know because you just never know how guys coming off injuries are going to make it through the week, and that's always the qualifier that Carroll gives.
I'm going to go from one that we're expecting to one that might be the most confusing timeline, which is Daryl Taylor. Are we going to see him this year?
Boy, that's a much harder answer. I don't know. I know that just from talking to people in the building, they really thought that he was going to be a part of the equation this year, and it was really kind of part of the approach that they took towards Clowney. And they wanted to sign Clowney, but there was a limit to how far they wanted to go because they felt good about the guys that they had, and Daryl Taylor was one of those guys. And so they certainly did not expect him to be out for this long. And we talked about a potential setback with Adams. I think that's what happened with Taylor, either that or they didn't realize exactly how bad that injury was when they had him in for the pre-draft visit that included the physical. I don't know. I mean, I wish I could have a better answer for you there, but the way that works with guys coming off of PUP or NFI or potentially coming off of those lists is I believe they have 5 weeks starting now, and so the clock is sort of ticking there. So, but he's not practicing this week, and it doesn't sound like he's on the verge of practicing next week either.
Brady, one of the players that everybody is going to be asking about and concerned about, obviously, is Damon Snacks Harrison, newly acquired and placed on the practice squad. What are his chances of getting put on the active roster this week after talking with Pete Carroll?
Boy, I wish I had a better answer for you guys than I don't know. I'm 3 for 3 on I don't
Brady.
Know. I mean, certainly there was no chance that he was going to play before that Minnesota game, having just joined the practice squad on Wednesday, and you're talking about a guy who's, A, 31 years old and 350 pounds, and also has not played since last season. So they've been pretty clear that it's a matter of him work himself into football shape, which I'm sure would be true of anybody that, you know, anybody in his position that they would have signed off the street, but probably more so for him, just given his size. And so the fact that he will have now had 3 weeks, I think it's a lot more realistic. Although, as Pete Carroll said yesterday, you know, they didn't practice in pads that first week. So this week, whenever they get in pads, I think he said maybe Thursday, that was going to be telling. But if it's not this weekend, then I'm sure that they would certainly hope he can make it back next weekend against the 49ers, because that's the type of team that you want Snacks Harrison in the middle of your defense for, a team that likes to run the ball quite a bit. And that is what he does. As we all know, he's probably not going to help a ton in terms of pass rush, but he is going to help in their run defense, and they're going to need that against San Francisco.
Well, Brady, we're sorry to keep putting you on the spot here. Why don't we just go for a 4-for-4 and ask you about Josh Gordon, too? I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Nobody knows about what's going on with Josh Gordon right now. But, Brady, how important are these next 5 weeks for the Seahawks? There's so many different aspects of this team that you look at in terms of, you know, this team and offensively, defensively. How important are these next 5 weeks?
Yeah, this is the toughest stretch of their schedule, there's no doubt. And you know, two games against Arizona, one against San Francisco, one against the Rams, one against Buffalo. Three of those games are on the road. You're talking about some playoff teams from last year, including the defending NFC champions. And so, yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's pretty interesting when you look at these next five games and then the five games after that. That's, you know, there's just such a clear delineation between teams that look pretty good right now and then the next five teams that don't really look all that good. And so I was on another show talking about, you know, I was asked, what record would you take? What would be good enough for them over these next five games? And I said, you know, 3-2 sounds realistic when you consider that, yeah, the Seahawks are 5-0, but they very easily could be 3-2 just with how close those two finishes were against New England and Minnesota. And so, yeah, I think 3-2 would be okay, because you know that you got a good chance to make hay with those next five games after that.
When it comes to potential trades, Brady, how willing or unwilling do you think the Seahawks are to be giving up more draft picks, given what they've already done with the Jamal Adams trade?
Yeah, that's a good one. And you know, the Adams trade, part of that, you know, part of their willingness to give up that first-round pick was just the uncertainty over what that next year's draft is going to look like, coming off a season where, you know, a lot of teams aren't even going to be playing college football. So it's going to be a ton of guesswork, even more so than, you know, a normal draft is. And so I wonder about that. You know, on one hand, they've already given up a ton of their draft capital, including the first-round pick. But if that was part of the logic for giving up, part of the reasoning for being willing to giving up, you know, that first-round pick for Adams, then maybe that same thing applies. Maybe you just sort of punt on that draft. It's kind of hard to fathom that, just knowing how top heavy the roster is and how important that cost-controlled talent is that you find in the draft. But if that was part of the reasoning for, you know, for giving up the first-round pick and then some for Adams, and I could see that same thing applying to, you know, say, a player that they really feel like they need at the deadline. You know, I could also see them fielding calls for certain guys on their roster right now who, you know, aren't really seeing the field. B.J. Finney, maybe even Jacob Hollister, as Hollister has been for this team. He's not really playing a whole lot. I think only 48 offensive snaps, and you've got Colby Parkinson, you know, coming back from NFI at some point, and so we all know John Schneider is as aggressive as anybody in terms of trying, including at the deadline. So it would not shock me if he does something.
It wouldn't shock me if he did something either. I guess my next question would be, does it make more sense to make a trade for somebody who strengthens your strength, meaning the offense, or strengthens a weakness, meaning the defense?
Yeah, it's all going to depend on what that deal looks like. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. Who are you going to be adding to the offense right now that is really going to, A, have a role on the team, and B, be a big difference maker? You know, if you could say receiver, but you've got Philip Dorsett coming back. Maybe Josh Gordon coming back later in the season. But you've got the logjam at tight end that I mentioned, running back. You're going to have maybe a logjam there once Rashad Penny gets back. And the offensive line has got I think seems like some pretty good depth there. So I would imagine that that's more on the defensive side, and that would probably depend. You know, we all know that they could use pass rushing help, and that's going to depend, you know, how hard they look for that. I'm sure it's going to depend to a big degree on a large degree on what happens with Darrell Taylor.
Just speaking to that defense right now, I mean, this is a big question, so feel free to break it up however you want, or maybe just look at one aspect of it. But what in your mind has been the biggest issue with the defense through 5 weeks? Because this is not a defense we're used to seeing with Pete Carroll.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, the pass rush and the coverage are always very interconnected, and you know, people can look at the fact that they've been gassed through the air. I think that is only a, you know, secondary, a defensive backfield problem. I think it's that. You've certainly seen guys, you've seen coverage busts. You've seen guys not stay on top and get beat deep. But I think that, you know, the pass rush has got a lot to do with that, too. And, you know, guys, you know, they've faced, I don't know what the exact number is, but, you know, they're among the league leaders in terms of passing attempts faced. And yet they've only had 9 sacks. And so that 9 sack number really stands out when you consider how many opportunities for sacks they've had. And so I think it's both of those two. You know, the linebacker core obviously took a hit with Bruce Sherman going down, but that was a pretty deep position group, and I think they've been able to survive there. I think it's a matter of the pass rush and the defensive coverage and just how those two things work together. The run defense, you know, I thought was okay before the Minnesota game when they gave up, I believe, under 200 yards. But I look at that as kind of the relationship between the not getting enough pressure and the coverage not being good enough in the secondary.
When you're watching it, is it scheme? Is it execution? Is it personnel? I mean, what seems to be the biggest glaring issue? Because when I think about it, I'm like, well, you got a guy you're paying $11 million to. You got a guy that's a first-round pick. I mean, you've got talent in there. On your defensive line, it's just not working out. I mean, what seems to be the big problem there up front?
Well, you know, this whole season, I was fascinated because of what they were trying to do, which was mount a credible pass rush without an obvious primary threat guy. And, you know, just look around the division to see what I'm talking about. Rams have that guy and Aaron Donald. The 49ers had that guy before he went down. And Joey Bosa. Same thing with the Cardinals and Chandler Jones, and the Seahawks did not have that primary, you know, Pro Bowl, All-Pro guy, and their approach, I think, was kind of a sacks or pass rush by committee type approach, where it was a lot of guys that, you know, are probably would be really good complementary pieces to one of those other guys that I mentioned, but they don't have that guy, and so I, you know, especially with Bruce Irvin not being there, Darrell Taylor not being there, yeah, I think you could say it's a personnel issue with that part of the defensive equation, not so much on the back end with the secondary. I think that secondary is way too talented, even with Trey Flowers in there, you know, for some of the time in place of Quentin Dunbar. I see it, those two things as kind of opposite. I think there's maybe a lack of pass rushing firepower. But that's not the case in the secondary. They've got way too much talent to be getting gassed the way that they have.
All right, very last question here, pretty easy one. Are there any other names we should be watching outside of Jamal Adams when it comes to who might miss this game?
Yeah, I'm just thinking of other guys that were on that missed that last game. Carlos Hyde, he also did not play, but it sounds like he was close to playing. And with the bye week, I can't imagine that. He would have to miss another game again, unless there was another setback. And then Jordan Brooks, that's going to be another interesting one. Don't believe we got a chance to ask Carroll about his status, but he was another guy who missed 2 games and then had to bye a week. And so I think there's, you know, again, we'll see on Wednesday and have a better idea as the week progresses. But he'd be the other guy to keep an eye on this week.
All right. He is Brady Henderson. You can read his work on ESPN.com. Brady, thanks so much.
Okay. Thanks for having me. Take care.
All right. Let's get to NFL headlines. The Dolphins have officially named Tua Tagovailoa their starting quarterback, benching Ryan Fitzpatrick. We all knew it was coming. Ryan Fitzpatrick did a serviceable job for the Dolphins in the first 5-6 weeks of the season. Tua, though, now taking over. You guys, there was a picture that I loved from the other night's game against the Jets where Tua walks out onto the field and is just sitting there. This might have been after the game, just kind of taking it all in. Obviously, his long road back from hip surgery after college, finally getting a chance now to take over the helm for the Dolphins, a team that he'll be married to, presumably, for the long term. So, really cool moment for him. Ryan Fitzpatrick, obviously, it's never great getting benched, but he's someone who knew the role, knew the situation coming into this season, and has had nothing but good things to say about Tua. So really awesome moment for them, I think.
Yeah, it is an awesome moment. Overall, I feel bad for Ryan Fitzpatrick, who I think has been playing good football and winning football for them, helping them get to 3-3. But does anybody else think it's odd timing that here you are, you know, trying to help Tua, trying to ease him into a nice, easy, soft landing, trying to help his development, and yet you throw him right into the fire versus the L.A. Rams? Like, out of anybody it's on that schedule, don't you think you would have played
him
this last week versus the Jets? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Here, Tua, you know, you just came off of a major injury. Go ahead and make your first start against Aaron Donald, who's been ripping up this entire league, 7.5 sacks. Go ahead. Like, to me, that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But, I mean, Brian Flores has been holding off and holding off, and he feels like Tua has shown him through practice, through his preparation, that he's ready to take on this challenge. And I hope it works out for Tua. I hope it works out for the Miami Dolphins, because I'm a huge Tua Tagovailoa fan. We'll be rooting for him hard. But I just find it really, really odd timing.
Yeah, it's not the team I would have chosen to have him face off against, but Tua probably itching to get back out there. Flores clearly all the confidence in the world with his young quarterback. So, Tom, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's the right decision for them.
Well, they're 3-3. They're a game behind Buffalo. I mean, that's the thing. We think of Miami as always being out of it because they're always trailing the Patriots. But the Patriots are a game behind them, actually a half a game. So are the Dolphins saying to themselves, we're in this thing and we think Tua actually gives us maybe a better chance?
Potentially.
Going forward? Right. Or are they saying, even at a game behind Buffalo, we're realistic and we don't think we're going to make the playoffs this year, so we're just going to, you know, give Tua a soft landing here. I mean, Fitzpatrick's been playing pretty darn well this year. So if they think that they're in it, why wouldn't you stick with the guy who you know is playing pretty darn well? I mean, have they looked at the standings lately? Maybe they don't realize that. I don't know.
I don't know. It is peculiar, but I think it's the latter, Tom. I think that Brian Flores and this organization is about winning. I truly believe that. I think that they are serious about winning. I think that they believe that Tua, giving him this opportunity right now, is going to be the best thing for them this year and for years to come. So I scratch my head at the decision personally and the timing of it, but clearly they feel a certain way about this young man, and I'm rooting for him.
I hope that our producer, Big Kyle Brown, isn't listening right now because I've got some Gardner Minshew updates. Gardner Minshew, he wasn't in danger of being benched in his performance the other week where he threw for a season low, I think 243 yards, a touchdown, and a pick. It wasn't a great performance by him, but if he doesn't step it up, he could be in danger of being benched later this season. So he's got a chance to redeem himself and to be the guy moving forward. But Mike Glennon, right back there, looking over his shoulder, looking for a chance to potentially take over the helm there in Jacksonville. I don't know that this happens for Gardner Minshew. I think that he is the best quarterback they have on their roster. It's obvious. It was a down day. It wasn't great. He's going to have those. He's one of those guys to me, and maybe I'll be wrong and proven wrong. Gardner Minshew is a guy that's like the tier three quarterback. You know what I mean? Like, not as good as even like a Jared Goff. It's like Nick Foles, how we were talking about the other day. He is just good enough to be your guy, but not, is he the guy that's going to take you all the way? Is he the guy that's going to take you to a Super Bowl?
Right. I think that's a good comparison. But, you know, in Gardner Minshew's situation, this to me bothers me because Doug Marrone, he's on the hot seat himself. And changing the quarterback with Gardner Minshew, putting in Mike Glennon, Or Jake Luton, who is a local boy from Marysville Pilchuck area, Gardner is the best option for them. Doug Marrone is not going to save his job by all of a sudden making a quarterback switch and them sparking themselves to play better. I think that everything the tea leaves are reading that Doug Marrone, this is going to be his last year, and I think it's probably the right thing.
Yeah, I mean, what's the difference between Doug Marrone saying he's never considered benching Minshew and not ruling it out? Isn't that a weird sort of juxtaposition there? Like,
you mean saying,
I
like, no, I didn't think
that
about it, but like, you know, yeah, I mean, I guess I could do that. I hadn't thought about it before, but That's
right.
Tempting.
Acknowledging that you haven't ruled it out,
yeah.
but saying you haven't considered it. Like, where on the spectrum are we then? I mean, that's just saying both of those things means essentially that he doesn't want to answer the question.
Also,
right
I don't believe you. Like, I do not believe that as a head coach, especially of a young quarterback or a quarterback in his first year that isn't a guy that you necessarily drafted your first rounder to be the guy of the future or whatever, I don't believe you haven't considered it. Like, I straight up do not believe you.
Maybe not, Stacey, but either way, at the end of the day, leave Gardner Minshew alone. Don't touch Gardner Minshew. Let him play. Let him show what he can do. And the person that should be worried about whether they're going to get benched or not or kicked to the curb is Doug Marrone. I mean, I was surprised that he had his job this year to begin with.
All right. A former UW Husky is requesting a trade. Last one right here. John Ross requesting a trade out of Cincinnati. He's been a healthy scratch for three games, had just one snap, I believe, in the last game for Cincinnati. Would you want him here in Seattle?
No, because he plays a similar role to Philip Dorsett. I mean, that's why you brought in Philip Dorsett, was to bring in a speedy receiver, next level speed, and could get there on the field. Now, if you believe Philip Dorsett can't get on the field and you're planning on cutting him, then maybe you do look at John Ross. But you talk about trading, John Schneider is not going to want to give up a draft pick for a player like John Ross. I can tell you that right now, when they have Philip Dorsett. So not too strong of interest there.
What's on tap?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey, brought to you by Dietz and Watson. So, folks, what's on tap?
All right, obviously you got Bob, Dave, and Moore coming up next, but then you got Dodgers versus Rays for World Series Game 1. That'll be tonight at 5 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Coming up next, who is the most talented player in the NFL? I want to know what you think. Text your answer in to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line 710-710. Michael Bumpus of the Seahawks pre- and post-game show gave his answer this morning on Danny and Gallant, and I can promise you it's going to surprise you. That's next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app, powered by Dubin Law Group. Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost here. Going back over our three questions of the day. I'm going to go ahead and go in reverse order, though, you guys. Going to start with this one. So this stems from a conversation that Michael Bumpus had on with Danny and Gallant. I wasn't there. They were talking about the most talented player in the NFL. Cut two. Here's what Bump had to say.
Kyler Murray is the most talented quarterback in the NFL. Not the best quarterback. He can throw with Pat. He can run with Lamar. He is the most talented. He's not the best quarterback. When you think of the best quarterbacks in the game, Patrick Mahomes is up there. Russell Wilson is up there. Lamar Jackson won the MVP last year. Now, talent means he can run fast. He can throw it far. He's elusive. It doesn't mean that, okay, fourth quarter, I'm going to give it to Kyler Murray to win the football game. No, that's Russell Wilson's job. It's not he's going to lead this team to a Super Bowl. No, that's Pat Mahomes' job. You just look at the physical attributes. He was 9 for 24 last night, but I still saw him make some throws. I'm like, that ball traveled 55, 60 yards in the air, and he barely missed.
All right, I'm going to make this a two-parter. I want to hear the most talented quarterback, which Bump did specify, then the most talented player, because those are some more fun answers. And I'm going to take Nick Foles off the table, just because it's the obvious answer. Bear down, Curtis. Nick Foles, not included here. You cannot include him. So most talented quarterback, is it Kyler Murray?
The most talented quarterback in this league, I think you could make an argument that it is Kyler Murray. I think that he is probably in my very, very short list. But I think that when you look at it from the set of guidelines that Michael Bumpus has laid out, I think you can put Kyler Murray as the most talented quarterback in the league. He can do everything. He can be an elite player with his legs and elusiveness. He's a problem in the run game. He's a problem, with his ability to throw the ball. He can make every throw that you ask him to. He got a quick release. I mean, so there's a lot to like there with Kyler Murray. No question about that. And I think that it's a very important distinction that he made: talent versus production.
Yeah.
Because when you go to that production side, to me, the best player in this league right now is Russell Wilson.
Does talented in this context mean blessed? Like, what were you gifted with?
I mean, I think any player in the NFL, there's a level of just like genetic lottery to what you can do.
Yeah, I think who won the genetic lottery in the league? I think that's Cam Newton. Now, at this point in his career, that may not be true because he's been so beat up and Kyler Murray hasn't. But if I were to just construct a quarterback out of nothing physically, I would probably do that along the lines of a Cam Newton. I might give him like Russell Wilson's brain or Kyler Murray's brain. Or something like that. But, yeah, Kyler Murray would have to be up there. I mean, the talent level between, like, all in, all the different attributes that you could consider between Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, Lamar, Patrick Mahomes. Even Newton. Yeah, I mean, all of the top quarterbacks, even Rodgers.
Josh Allen.
In his prime. No, I'll leave him out of it.
Tom Brady.
I'll sub, out.
Drew
I'll sub
Brees.
Him out, put in Goff.
Oh, wow.
The difference is just razor thin. It really is when you think about it. I mean, what's the biggest difference between Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson right now? Isn't it experience? NFL experience?
I believe that it's, yeah, sure. There's far more experience. I think that Russell Wilson's playing the quarterback position at the highest level that you possibly can at this point, and Kyler Murray's still searching and growing his game.
I would think their deep ball looks a bit different, too.
Yeah, I mean, Russell Wilson is the best deep ball thrower in the game. There's a lot of throws that Kyler missed last night versus the Cowboys that Russell just doesn't. And if he does, he doesn't.
Doesn't that have to
like
do with experience,
like
though?
An itch.
He's had time to work on his game, is what I mean.
Yeah, but
he came into the league with that ability. I mean, he's been a tremendous deep ball thrower from the very get go. You know, in terms of the experience part of it,
the throws that he makes and the
offense.
Ones that he doesn't.
Right, but I'm saying that the ones that he makes and the ones
I'm not
he doesn't,
talking about
he
is that's your department.
the ones he makes, the ones he doesn't. Sure, at this point in time, there are throws that he's making now that he didn't make when he was in his second year in this league. But I'm talking about from a pure accuracy standpoint. There were moments with Kyler in that game versus the Cowboys, and I've seen this throughout the year, that he's had some bad misses this year where Russell just really hasn't had those. Maybe making the wrong decision early in his career from time to time, but never just a serious, consistent bad miss.
Now, if you were to say, what makes the difference between talent, not just production, but best, between talented and best? Because you had someone on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710, say, you know, if we're talking just talented players, maybe you could do both quarterbacks and players involved in there. Maybe you'd say someone like Taysom Hill, incredibly athletic, can block, can run, can catch, can throw, can do everything. Obviously, he's not the best quarterback. And right now, Kyler Murray, not the best quarterback. I mean, Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes leading that conversation by far. But what makes someone the most talented versus just the best?
Well, talent is, you know, one of the other things, too, is you look at Aaron Donald, his talent. Maybe he doesn't have the prototypical size, but his talent at the defensive tackle position is second to none. His ability in terms of combining explosiveness and how fast he runs with the power that he has. That's another example of a player just being unbelievably talented. It just so happens that Aaron Donald is also one of the best players to ever play this game, that his production matches his talent. But I think it's those rare, God-given, unique traits and abilities that just simply not most other people do not have. So you brought up Josh Allen, Stacey. I think that's another excellent quarterback that you could put in that conversation. Unbelievable talent, but production doesn't necessarily match the talent. At least the last 2 weeks of this season haven't matched for him. The first four were pretty impressive.
Yeah, when we went over overall players that we just think are some of the most talented players in the league, I had Aaron Donald in there too. I also said Derrick Henry, and part of that's been influenced heavily by the last year or so of play from him. He is just otherworldly. I mean, one of those guys, when he's on the field, he's one of the best athletes on the field. I'm going to skip ahead to another question here because I want to hear what you guys have to say. Which team scares you most right now? Arizona, San Francisco, or Los Angeles? This is a question Tom asked us earlier today. We all had different answers, at least for kind of the order of two and three. I said Los Angeles is a team that scares me the most right now. They're the most balanced of these three teams and potentially the least injured. I think following that would be Arizona. Tom, how do you feel about it?
All of the above. And it's head-to-head, right? It's not about who I think is going to win the division necessarily.
Just which team makes you the most nervous.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, all of them in their own way. If we can't get a pass rush going against the Rams, they scare the heck out of me. If we do, then they don't really scare me as much. San Francisco, I just think defensively, as we saw the other night against the Rams, if you get an inspired effort from them, regardless of who's out there, oddly, whether they're injured or not, I think could create a lot of problems for the Seahawks offense, which is not something that any other team has been able to do yet. They're averaging 33.8 points per game, with 27 being their lowest total. So really, nobody's been able to stifle them yet. One of these three teams that we're talking about will be able to do that over the next five games or so. So, and how will they withstand that? Will they be able to, you know, still be able to come up with defensive stops and big plays and all that? We'll see what ends up determining the game. But somebody's going to be able to do better than that.
All right, don't forget you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. Let's get back to, we're going to talk about what this next 5 weeks are going to tell us about the Seahawks, potential Seahawks moves for the trade deadline. Also, that's up next.
The wait is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports.
Step back.
Welcome back into Tom, Jake, and Stacey. We're going to start previewing Seattle's game against the Arizona Cardinals later this week. We'll kick that off with the huddle on Thursday, obviously. But before we look specifically at next week, we were taking a broader look at the next 5 weeks on Seattle's schedule, figuring out what exactly it's going to tell us about the Seahawks team. And the three of us think it'll tell us definitively three different things. Jake, you said it'll tell us about Russell Wilson's campaign for MVP.
Yes, I think that this week, these 5 weeks, obviously, as Russell Wilson goes, the team goes, and we're going to find a lot out about different factors of the team. But this is really Russell Wilson's opportunity to kind of stamp, seal, and tie on the bow of this MVP campaign. If he can be successful through these 5 weeks, and they're winning the majority of these games, 4-1, 5-0, 3-2 even, I think it really puts him in a prime position to be able to walk away with the MVP, just seeing how the race currently sits and that he's going to be playing the teeth of the schedule. It's always about strength of schedule. It's always about what you do, A, in your division, and B, what your record is overall. So I think that part of it is going to be a key factor for Russell Wilson potentially being, for the first time, getting his first MVP.
I think we're going to find out whether or not the Seahawks are truly elite and ahead of the class in the NFC, or if they're just another strong contender, like, say, four or five other teams. And this just occurred to me, but Green Bay fans before this game with Tampa Bay last weekend were probably thinking along similar lines. Are we a great team, or are we just like another contender, say Tampa Bay? Now, the fact that Tampa Bay beat them isn't conclusive. Maybe Green Bay really still is elite going forward, but this just sort of brings the picture into focus a little, and it'll be the same with the Seahawks against their next five opponents. They're going to be figuring out things about themselves, too. I'm speaking of the opponents. The difference, though, for the Seahawks is that being undefeated, Seattle's more likely to come down, whereas the others are likely to go up. The question from yesterday that we were talking about with Clayton as to whether or not a loss would benefit the team will be answered later on. So if they lose a game or lose two games and they end up learning from it, okay, what are our weaknesses that actually beat us? What do we need to make better? That could actually end up benefiting them down the road. But again, we'll only be able to know that in retrospect. So let's ask the same question again, say, for the last five games of the season.
No, I think it's a good point, Tom, the idea of if you're Green Bay, just like you can't necessarily overreact to that one loss to Tampa Bay, we don't need to reexamine this conversation per se after the game against the Arizona Cardinals. Whether they win, whether they lose, whatever happens, the important thing is to just kind of wait it out, see what the next full, like, kind of middle part, the meaty part of the schedule is going to look like. Because a loss or a win against the Arizona Cardinals doesn't necessarily answer any of our 3 points or questions definitively. Jake's was Russell Wilson's MVP campaign being set here right in the middle of the season. Tom's was that you're going to find out not just whether the Seahawks are an elite team that set themselves apart from the rest of the league, but how the rest of the NFC West, or excuse me, the NFC kind of shakes out, because obviously those teams will be comparing themselves to Seattle as well. What I think we're going to learn over the next 5 weeks is whether or not your defense is going to keep you from a Super Bowl. You know that this offense can win you a Super Bowl. They have the talent to do that. The defense has the talent to get you there. Bobby Wagner, best middle linebacker in the game. Jamal Adams, one of the best safeties in the game, maybe the best strong safety in the game. I mean, you've got talent. KJ Wright having another career season. It hasn't been able to come together on the field. You are allowing over 470 total net yards per game, which is the most in the NFL. 370 passing yards per game, also the most in the NFL. If you can't keep Kyler Murray at bay, you can't keep Jared Goff at bay, the competition's only going to get harder in the postseason. So you got to make sure that you can keep those teams, those offenses, quieted down just a bit here in the next stretch. So I think that this is going to be a huge test for the defense. Russell Wilson could throw a pick in the next two games, and I'm not necessarily going to be worried that this offense is falling apart. If the defense cuts back even 100 yards from their total, which wouldn't put them anywhere near the top of the league, but even 100 yards from their total, I would think it was a huge step forward. I would take a lot from that.
What if
what if the defense lost you the game?
No, what if you cut 100 yards off the defensive performance, but they ended up losing the game for a reason unrelated to that?
It's a good question. I will have assumed it was a really close game and that it was a great performance from the Cardinals, and I think I still would consider it a success. Although I would assume that if you cut back on that yardage, part of the reason is that you're also getting off the field on third down and you're hopefully keeping them from scoring. So that those are tied to, I think I tie that more to other indicators of a successful defensive performance. Maybe more so than you do. Because I get why you would say, yards isn't everything.
Yep.
Right. And the reality is that they're probably going to drop a game. They might drop two in this time frame. I mean, to go undefeated is so extremely hard in this league. And so to expect that they're not going to drop a game in the next 5 weeks is probably unrealistic. But it's how do they look when they do it, or how they look when they win also. Because even as they've won five, been 5-0, and things have been great and there's so much to be excited about, there is that lingering question. So I think, Tom and Stacey, your guys's, although different, really fit into each other. You're going to find out if this team is truly elite. And the way that you're going to find out is by this defense improving. If this defense can improve, now you have a more complete team, a team that genuinely can not only get ahead of teams, but you can put teams away early in games. A defense can help win you a ball game in critical moments. I think that this group right now, as it sits, there are still lingering questions about this team, this defense, and can they win having great offensive output and yet historically bad defensive performances? You're going to find out if you can get that done realistically against some of the tougher teams in the NFC.
Just a very quick point here. I think the most interesting thing that's going on just throughout the NFC here, and I guess you can include the Bills, the AFC too, and this may be just one of the reasons why we love football so much, is that it's not that the Seahawks are the only team trying to figure themselves out. All of these teams are. Right, it's not like we're just going up against this one sort of monolithic opposition. They're all trying to figure out who they are. Some will ascend, some will descend. And every fan in every market is probably asking a different version of this question. It just so happens that right now the Seahawks are the only team that haven't been beaten in this scenario. But as we go on, I mean, that's what makes it fascinating.
Well, I
thankfully think this, we have NFL.
It's a great conversation, and I love that topic. I think this team has figured out who it is. Most fans are comfortable with that. I think most Seahawks fans, and I don't want to speak for anyone, but just based on reaction I see, for instance, like on Twitter on game days, I think most fans are very cool with being like, yeah, we score a lot of points. We get a lot of touchdowns. Russell Wilson's the GOAT. Like, I'm cool with this identity. I think Pete Carroll would like for that identity to still be settled and involve some more defensive prowess, specifically with the secondary. And I think that that's also, Bob Condotta wrote about this for the Seattle Times earlier this week. I thought it was great. That's their best chance at getting better. Like, you're not going to suddenly be great up front, but you've got enough weapons in your secondary where that could be the area that you improve and start to turn that around.
Yeah, I love that. I love this idea that this team hasn't even come close to reaching its ceiling. And that's the most exciting part. When you look at, there's only three undefeated teams left. The Seattle Seahawks are the lone undefeated team in the NFC. Mm-hmm. There is plenty of room for growth and improvement. And I believe that they have the ability, from a coaching staff standpoint, from a personnel standpoint, to get to that level. Now it's the first one in this 5-week stretch that we're talking about, the Arizona Cardinals. And we're going to find out really, really quickly what this team's all about.
All right. Once again, we're going to start previewing that game later this week. That'll start with the huddle on Thursday. You've got Bob David Moore coming up next. And don't go anywhere, because then you've got Game 1 of the World Series at 5 p.m. Dodgers versus Rays right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. This has been Tom, Jake, and Stacey.